Hey, let's head to the Brown and Crouppen celebrity line. Our friend Rick Horton, Cardinal broadcaster, joins us now on 101 ESPN in the Fast Lane. Rick, always good to talk to you. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, and just to report in on that, my weight has been steady. So we've been doing a lot of creative workouts in the basement, and I'm having several communities of people that are texting the workouts back and forth. So in case you're worried about me, I'm good on that front.
Good for you. What's the main thing that you've found to do in the confined space of your basement?
Well, my favorite thing to do is a thing called deck of cards, and we have several people that belong to the YMCA where my wife works in West County, and we've got a group of people that kind of do it and report on how we've done it. And deck of cards is you flip over every card in the deck, and if it's a diamond, you do that many push-ups. If it's a club, you do that many body squats. If it's a heart, you do that many jumping jacks, and if it's a spade, then you do sit-ups. So by the time you're done, you're tired. You're really done, but it's a good workout.
But is there anything that you have discovered about yourself now that you have all this time to be at home as opposed to being out and about and calling Cardinals games and whatnot?
One thing I've discovered is I actually enjoy cooking, and I've heard a number of people talk about that that's kind of it. I mean, I never get a chance to do that. I don't, you know, in 36 years of marriage, I don't think I've cooked but 10 times up until the last month. And so I've kind of gotten into that and kind of a membership deal with HelloFresh, which has been really helpful and getting me jump started. But I find out that I'm really enjoying it.
Rick, do you enjoy cleaning up? Because I had one of those membership deals. I didn't do HelloFresh. I think I did Blue Apron for a while, and there were so many different ingredients, and then I got, like, everything out of the kitchen. Like, the meal was always great, but then I left a mess behind me. Do you enjoy that part as well?
Well, actually, I do, BT. I'm kind of a – I don't know why I like that. I don't really mind the cleanup stuff. Don't let Ann know that. But I don't really mind that. I want her to think I'm contributing here. But one thing I will say is the first couple of times I tried to cook, I think I literally used every pot and every pan in our kitchen. So I've learned how to streamline that a little bit over time. So nothing like experience to make you better at something.
Rick Horton with us in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. And Ricky, yesterday I wrote about that Easter game from 1987, the seat cushion game, where Tom Herr hit the game-winning grand slam in the 10th. What do you remember about that?
Well, honestly, being at that game was just extraordinary because when you're actually on the field and seat cushions are coming on your head, it's a very different perspective than when we talk about it in Cardinal history, because so the seat cushions come down and you're thinking, huh, I wonder if they're going to hurt when they land on you. I mean, there's literally thousands of them. I mean, we talk about the sea of red. Well, that night it was the sea of seat cushions. And I also remember working with our clubhouse, or actually our usher down the right field line. He brought out a broom and he was picking them up and putting them in trash bags to try to, you know, kind of clean up. And he had Ken Daly and I helping him. So that's kind of what I remember about that day. And obviously the home run was huge. And, you know, Tommy Herr is one of our more underrated Cardinal alumni. He was just such a big part of those clubs in the 80s.
Well, good thing it wasn't paperweight night. That could have
right. worked out. Or baseball night.
I was going to ask you, you mentioned Tom Herr being underrated. I mean, that was one of two home runs that he had on the entire season. So I would have to think that was one of those moments where maybe we're expecting a big hit to drive in some runs, but maybe not a grand slam to walk it off.
Yeah, and so a lot like when Ozzie ends up hitting a home run, in the playoffs, and that was 85, and went off the Needham Pure when he hadn't hit a home run left-handed ever. So when guys like that hit home runs, it was a big deal. We're kind of ho-hum on home runs now, aren't we? I mean, we expect everybody, even a second baseman and a shortstop, to hit 20-plus. And, you know, at that time, the way the game was and the way the fences were and the way whatever the factors are involved in that, guys just weren't there weren't as many power hitters up and down the lineup. So, I will say this about Tom Herr. He found a way to win games. He was a winner. And so, you know, he kind of one of those guys where nothing he did would surprise you. In fact, one of the things he reminds me of, one of the people he reminds me of, is Yadier Molina, who We always talk about Yachty being a coach on the field. That's what Tom Herr was.
And it's interesting, Rick, when you go back, the Cardinals down in the ninth inning of that game, 7-6. Ozzie leads off with a walk. He's bunted over by Tom Herr. Then Ozzie steals third and scores on a throwing error by Gary Carter. It was quintessential Whitey ball.
Yeah, and it's so, such exciting brand of baseball, and everybody likes what they like. Some people like the 480-foot home run, and in my mind, with it's 400, it still counts the same. I mean, it's still a run. And so people like the display of power. They like strikeouts, and I'm still, and of course I'm biased, but I'm partial to that brand of baseball that was just, you know, a lot of movement on the bases, a lot of outstanding defense, and just kind of situational hitting all over the place. And not just situational hitting, but situational base running. So there's a time to go first and third, and there's a time not to. And our guys were very well schooled on how to do that.
And with the way things have been over the last 20 years, for me, for example, going away to college and for the first time meeting a lot of people from Chicago who were Cubs fans, and we would talk about the Cardinals-Cubs thing, and I would tell them, you know, we really didn't me growing up hate the Cubs very much. It wasn't about them. It was about the Mets. That rivalry in the 80s when I was growing up was the rivalry, and it's really difficult to tell that to somebody else from a different market because they don't get it. That was the rivalry. That Cardinals-Mets thing, like, I hated the Mets when I was growing up. I didn't think much about the Cubs, but it was the Mets that I couldn't stand.
Oh, Chris, I'd give you a long string of names. If I said those names, I'd just make you cringe every name I say.
And start really with Hernandez. Go ahead.
Lenny Dykstra, Wally Backman.
Howard Johnson.
Howard Johnson, Barry Lyons. So you can go, you can mention a lot of names that will kind of get the hair on your back standing up. But that's exactly right. It took me a while here in St. Louis to, you know, having been from New York. I mean, it wasn't hard for me to kind of turn back on the Mets when they were so good, so competitive year in and year out with the Cardinals. And they were in our division. We were in the National League East, which is weird for people to realize, but we were actually in the East Division. So we played the Mets a lot. And so I would say I didn't like the Mets, and I nothinged the Cubs. Didn't really think about them very much. I just
exactly.
But I could tell that some fans felt that, certainly from the 60s and years prior. And of course the proximity of the cities adds to that. But in my mind, you know, if we beat the Mets, then life was good.
Ricky, who was your guy growing up? Did you have a player that you just loved and emulated, and maybe you finally got a chance to compete against him or watch? I mean, who was your guy?
My favorite player was a guy named Ron Swoboda, who nobody knows. He was a Met outfielder. So, again, being in New York, I just loved him. He made several great plays in the 1969 World Series. When I was 10 years old, the Mets won that year, and so I had his picture up on my wall next to Walt Frazier. Those two are the people I wanted to grow up and be like. And I had a chance to meet Ron Swoboda at an old-timers game at Shea Stadium. He actually played for the Mets. I'm sorry, Yankee Stadium. He played for the Yankees and the Mets both. And I'm meeting all these great Yankee players, Mickey Mantle. Elston Howard was there, and Yogi Berra is there, Bobby Richardson. And so was Ron Swoboda, and I went to go up and walk up and talk to him, and I could not talk to him. I was so nervous, and I walked away. I was with the White Sox at the time, and it was probably 15 years later that I met him at Al Roboski's golf tournament, because he was just iconic in my own mind, and it took me back to being a 10-year-old, which made me scared to even say hello to him.
That's cool, though. That's one of those things that I think that all ball players should remember, whether you're Mickey Mantle or you're Ron Swoboda, that somebody's looking up to you. Like, there's somebody that is always there. I think that's a really good reminder, Ricky.
Yeah, well, that was always the famous thing that Clemente always talked about, and actually Stan Musial did as well prior to Clemente, but they always thought about the way they played every day. There was somebody up in that stands that came there just to watch them, so they had an obligation to do everything they could do to make that fan feel like they got their money's worth, and that they could see the effort that you had. And so, and again, that's what fans want to see. They want to see effort. You're going to fail a lot in the game of baseball. We know that, but they certainly want to see effort. They want to know that you care.
Rick Horton with us on 101 ESPN. I want to touch on that 87 season. A couple of other things. You mentioned Barry Lyons. On Easter Sunday, with John Tudor just innocently sitting in the dugout, a pop fly into the dugout, and Barry Lyons runs into Tudor and breaks his leg. What was the scene like? What was the vibe like around the team after you lost your ace?
Well, you know, I kind of had the nearby effect because I was literally sitting next to him. So
man.
You talk about some traumatic thing that happens, and you know, I was right there, literally sitting right next to him. So the problem with me being the guy sitting next to him is the natural thought later is I probably should have dove in front and protected the better pitcher, but I didn't do that. I mean, but we just honestly what I remember about it happening was there's no way he's going to come into this dugout. I mean, there was no railing on Busch Stadium 2, and he just kept coming as if he was going to catch the ball even if he had to run out into the parking lot, and he was going full speed too, and he pinned Tudor's leg right up against the bench and broke it. And I would say the prevailing opinion was everybody was just very angry that he would even consider doing something that reckless. And, you know, John Tudor was, he's another one of my favorites. Maybe one of my, I always like to call him grouchy because, well, he was grouchy, but he has mellowed a lot as Brad would attest to seeing him at the fantasy camp. And just one of my favorite guys.
He still wants to win every camp that he's in, though.
Oh, doesn't he ever? Doesn't he ever? When he goes and draft, we do the draft of the campers, and anytime there's a rule violation or, I mean, he's the head umpire. He's everything. I mean, he's all about winning, no question.
Hey, Rick, I was going back and just looking at some of the numbers from that 87 season, and Jack Clark, I mean, he had a monster year. It was 35 bombs, drove in 106, and to your point earlier, look, the times were different, yet he's putting up 2019-type numbers back in 87, and it got me thinking about that feeling when Albert Pujols, who you know well, yeah. who you covered yeah. and are friends yeah. with, and like I said, no inside out, we knew that he was going to get the job done. When he was up, it was going to happen. Was that same feeling there with Jack Clark in 87?
100%. And I would actually say, you know, similar to kind of the McGuire feeling that you might be at the ball game and you're just going to go watch the Cardinals play. But when McGuire would come to bat or Pujols would come to bat or Jack Clark would come to bat in the 80s, everybody stopped what they were doing. I mean, not a time to go to the concession stand because they might do something very unique. They might hit a ball farther than you've ever seen hit. And it's time to watch the star hit. And, you know, people would do that with batting practice too. Maybe not quite the same as McGuire, but Jack had a presence. And Jack was, one of the interesting things about Jack is Jack didn't talk a whole lot. But when he said something, you knew it was going to be pretty strong. And he would do that with the opposing pitcher. He would just be walking up and down the dugout and just, I mean, scream at the other pitcher. And we would all just kind of suck in air and say, whoops, I guess Jack has been aroused. Be careful. So, you know, Jack broke a couple of urinals, as I remember, with a baseball bat after striking out a couple of times. And Brad, I'm sure you've seen players do that where they just they can't make contact with the ball, so they just go break something. And Jack was known to do that a time or two.
You know, you were talking about playing for the Sox, and I was thinking about the 1987 season. And Tito Landrum is a very big name with Sox fans from the early 80s because he had that really monster game for Baltimore in 83. So when you were with them, did people like Harold Baines or anybody talk to you about how much they couldn't stand Tito Landrum?
Well, I never brought him up. It's
okay.
Funny. And it's actually a great question. And one of the reasons – so I actually learned this from Terry Pendleton. Because I asked Terry, who was the coach with Roger McDowell when they were both with Atlanta. They both were coached. Terry was the hitting coach at one point, and Roger McDowell was the pitching coach. And I was just kind of casually asking him about it. And they've been coaching together for several years. And Terry, of course, hit a huge home run against Roger McDowell in Shea Stadium. That it was just an epic Cardinal moment. And I asked him, you know, did that ever come up? And he goes, no, I would never, we have never talked about it, never mentioned it. It's never kind of half jokingly. Nope, we're just not going there. So it's odd that, you know, players just have long memories about stuff like that. And it is, you know, it is personal, Chris, because this is, you know, it's something that maybe cost you a ring, cost you a chance at the World Series. And, you know, it's kind of like, the time I asked Todd Worrell about the moment in 1985 with Don Denkinger, I said, now that you've had all this time, Todd, to be past it, have you gotten through it better? And his answer was, it actually bothers me more now than it ever has. And I just thought that was an interesting answer.
Well, yeah, you get robbed of a ring because of something right. like that. That makes
That's
total
right.
sense. Yeah, yep. So we had a texter who reminded us the Mets are pond scum, and there were so many people that had those T-shirts. I remember seeing those shirts all the time. So going back to that Mets rivalry, I'm sure you heard last week the idea of maybe all of the teams, if we could work it out and the health officials say it's okay, having games played in Florida and having games played in Arizona and that be it at the spring training facilities. What would you think about the idea of the Cardinals being in a division with the Mets and the Nationals and the Marlins for a season?
Yeah, that one of the ideas that's out there, and I know there are several, and it's, you know, they're just kind of doing anything they can to get baseball back, and I understand that. Of course, with all the caveats you said, that it's still healthy enough to do it and the right thing to do, and just in as safe as we can possibly be. And so, you know, that is one of the thoughts. And if you're talking about those teams in that Jupiter area, one thing I'd say is they're pretty good teams there. I mean, you're talking about the Nationals, the Astros, the Mets. I mean, that would not be an easy group of people to have to play a lot. And I would honestly say that if whatever baseball is able to do for 2020, I think they just have to just do it. And you know, I'm a purist typically when it comes to baseball. You know, I like to have things not change too much because I think the game is, you know, you have to be careful about changing the game, players, the owners, and of course the fans that we can get through this.
One last thing for Rick Horton. In that 87 season, and it's fun to talk about this stuff, one of the dozen right fielders that Whitey Herzog employed was Rick Horton. How'd you do out there?
I'm not too well, Randy. I had two balls hit over my head, which, you know, Kendall was pitching. Willie McGee was playing short, and Johnny Morris was playing center field. I actually talked with Tom Wallace about this the other day, who was playing third base at the time. And we, of course, were reminiscing about that day. And I guess I wasn't playing deep enough because two balls hit over my head that Okendo said I should have caught. here's my favorite part of that. There were two players left that could have played right field, me and the aforementioned Todd Worrell. And our pitching coach, Mike Rourke, came down to the bullpen and was looking at the two of us, and he said, "We need somebody to play right field. And Whitey does not want you to get hurt, Todd, so Rick, you're playing right." So it's like, wait a minute. Did you just tell me if I get hurt, nobody cares? That's kind of how I was reading that. But anyway, I mean, mm-hmm. and I fortunately did not get hurt, fortunately, neither did Todd. And it was just kind of one of those fun, unique moments in baseball.
Fun times to talk about. Rick, we always like hearing your voice. Glad that you and the family are doing well. Thanks so much for the time. We'll see you soon.
Oh, you bet. You guys are the best. Thanks.
Thanks, Rick. Rick Horton, Cardinal broadcaster, with us on 101 ESPN. Next up, the Chiefs and the Blues have a lot in common. They went from cursed to seemingly invincible. That's next on 101 ESPN.